Two on, one out. The pitch. Curve is rocketed toward right. It's going to get down. A base hit. Marte rounds third. He will score easily. Eduardo Escobar makes the Phillies pay. The intentional walk to Alonso gives Escobar a chance to be the hero. And the Mets win it 5-4.
Hi, this is Emily Nyman, and you're listening to Breaking Balls. Welcome to episode 106 of Breaking Balls. I'm your host, Emily Nyman. I'm, of course, joined by my co-host, John Snyder. You can find us on Twitter at BreakBallsPod, or if you're feeling brassy, give the Breaking Balls hotline a call. 631-820-7377. It's almost tough to start the show, and by almost, I mean it's very tough. John literally just sat here through 30 seconds of silence of me trying to come up with something to say, and it's because another week of the Yankees and the Mets just being the best teams in baseball. I mean, it's almost, I feel like it's going to come crashing down at any moment because I keep starting episodes like this, but like, where else is there to start? You know what I mean? Like, let's just fucking put it out there. Yankees were 4-2 over the last week since we last recorded on the 24th. And that's not counting that game. The Mets are 6-0. I mean, there's just nothing stopping these two fucking teams.
Yeah, that's correct. I don't really have anything to add to that. The Mets are good. The Yankees are good.
That's all, folks.
See you guys next week.
Yeah, see you next week. And again, we can't take it for granted, right? New York baseball's on top. We got to appreciate it as long as it lasts. But I'm
also take it for granted too.
Oh, I'm 100%. Sure. And I'm more surprised to hear you say that you're waiting for the other shoe to drop, because as a Mets fan, I'm definitely waiting for the other shoe to drop because we're entering June, which is, you know, the Mets' mortal enemy as far as months go. So we'll see how it goes. We got a tough schedule coming up in June, but we went out of May with a bang. You know, 6 in a row, 2 sweeps in a row, especially after that series loss to the Giants. Yeah, man.
Which, by the way, I stayed up for until that last fucking inning. Like, I literally, that game went until 2 o'clock in the morning. They ended up losing 13-12. It was two of the greatest comebacks I've ever seen on either side of the ball. It was wild.
Oh, it was crazy. It was one of those where, like, you hate to lose like that, but you prefer to lose like that at the same time. You know what I mean? Like, you made the comeback all the way, and then it's extra innings, and all right, you know, the Giants got it done. But, you know, we lost the series, but, like, losing a series when that was the decisive game, like, okay, all right. We fought all the way to the end. What else can you ask for?
And as I'm sure everyone listening can imagine, John and I will hang out for a few hours after we're done recording. And during baseball season, we just watch whatever games are on. So when the Mets or the Yankees are on the West Coast, it's pretty awesome because we basically are able to catch most of the game. So last week, it was getting to be like 12 or 12:30, and the Mets were losing by like 7 runs or something. So John and I are like, all right, whatever. Let's just fucking call it a night right here. John goes home, and then like 20 minutes later, he texts me like, dude, are you watching this game? Like, all that was when the comeback just happened. It was insane.
And I'm lucky I caught it too, because these West Coast games fuck with me. And like, I got home from recording and I just went into autopilot. Like, I hadn't eaten yet, so I grabbed some food and I just like turned on my PlayStation and put on like Netflix or something. And 5 minutes later, I'm like, wait, it was like the 6th inning. What am I doing? And I had to totally get my shit together, put the game back on in time for all that.
The Yankees split against the Rays this weekend, which honestly, if you had asked literally any fan that's paying attention how they would have felt going into that series, what they would want the outcome to be, they would be okay with a split. I think that they probably should have won at least 3 of those games. It didn't feel as evenly matched as the record showed at the end of the weekend. Let me just put it that way. Aaron Judge was fucking player of the week, May 21st to the 26th. Let's be honest, he could be player of the week for the entire month of May. Like, I like how they just arbitrarily, they're like, fine, he's just getting better and better, so we have to give it to him this week because next week's the end of the month.
Oh, so you're saying he'd be more of like a, I don't know, a player of the month, as insane as that concept sounds.
If only there were such a thing. Gerrit Cole had a nice comeback this month. He still is putting too many men on base walking, but he had a great start against the Rays. What ended up being his undoing was walking 3 guys. He struck out 10. He went like 5 shutout innings, and then he kind of started to unravel a bit in the 6th. And I'm so glad I was literally, because I had a party that day, so I was doing a lot, and it was a day game, so I didn't catch most of it. I was listening to some on the radio. I was checking the app, and I saw that he had pitched 5 shutout innings, and he had, like, no hits and 8 or 9 strikeouts at that point. And I almost posted the meme where someone replaced a ball with, like, just, like, a black square that says suck my dick on it, like him throwing it towards home plate. And I came so close to posting it, and I was like, you know what? I am too superstitious for my own good. I'm not going to do this. And holy shit, was I glad, because then he, like, walked the next batter, walked another guy, and I'm so glad, because I would have been fucking blamed for that shit. 100%.
No, you're thinking about it wrong. Had you posted that, none of that would have happened.
Oh my God, dude. Why didn't I need to start thinking like that when it comes to my superstitions, though. Then I'm going to blame you when it goes wrong. I'll remember this moment.
Well, it's easy for me to say because I'm not superstitious. You're the former athlete here. So I'm just looking at it objectively. And either way, I could back out of it. I got no problem weaseling out of it.
The Yankees had a surprise signing. I mean, I didn't see it. I did not see it coming. I don't know if anyone did. They signed Matt Carpenter last Friday, who, if anyone remembers, he used to mash with the Cardinals for years. He was, like, only a Cardinal. I don't think he's ever played for another major league team.
Is that right?
I am going to say it's right, and I'm not going to look it up. I know that Quinn will get us in the voicemail next week.
Keep talking. I'm looking it up as you talk.
He also has a famous beard. You know, he's one of these, like, bearded players, and everyone was very, very anxious to see what he looked like. He decided to go for the clean-shaven face, but a thick mustache, and he looks like the fucking W.B. Mason guy.
Oh, wait, this just in.
Only the Cardinals?
Only the Cardinals before this, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, they signed him to, like, a minor league deal. His first plate appearance, he's, like, one of those old-timey players where he doesn't wear batting gloves, so, like, with his mustache plus not wearing batting gloves, he just, like, looked like such a badass. And his first plate appearance with the Yankees, he took a fastball to the elbow, like, to the back of his arm. Ooh. It just took it like a champ, though, when ran to first. Oh, my God. It was like, I love this guy immediately, right off the bat.
Well, yeah, I mean, doesn't the mustache add, like, +5 to durability automatically?
Yeah, he really had no choice but to take that one the way he did. He could have cried as a Cardinal, but as a Yankee, he had to take it that way because of the mustache. They were trying to do, like, comparisons, like, who he looked like most, and it was, like, Freddie Mercury, the W.B. Mason guy, and fuck, I can't remember the other one.
Freddie Mercury. That's a solid mustache comparison. Freddie's was robust.
This one is, too. I don't know if you've seen it. It's pretty legit, and especially because his fucking face is, like, so white, because it hasn't seen sun in God knows how long. So, like, the super dark black mustache offset on his, like, paper white cheeks is really unsettling to a certain extent.
If he's not actively playing, he will not go outside.
Apparently Donaldson's coming back soon. I mean, I don't really know what Stanton's timetable is at this point. I think he's going to be okay. He seemed to be taking some swings the other day during a pregame. The Yankees are now playing the Angels at the stadium. Today was rained out, of course. The Yankees fumbled this, and I get why. You know, it's not like the West Coast teams can just, like, swing by New York to make up a game. So, like, the Yankees seemingly will try to outlast rain whenever the Angels are in town, because last year they had a famous rain delay that lasted, like, 4 hours, and then Aroldis Chapman gave up a fucking grand slam in the top of the 9th inning, and then the Angels ended up winning that game, and those people were not leaving the stadium. They were so upset throwing things and shit because they waited for 4 hours just to watch the Yankees just combust.
Well, and it feels even worse because we're recording on Wednesday this week, and inexplicably the Yankees didn't play on Monday, which was Memorial Day either. So now this is 2 weekdays in a row without a baseball game for you guys. That's rough.
The Memorial Day off is so strange to me. Like, I'm glad they had the day off because within the context of the season, they basically only had, like, 1 or 2 days off for the last 3 or 4 weeks. So I'm happy they did, but it's so strange that they fucking didn't schedule them a game on Memorial Day. And they also have off on 4th of July.
Yeah, and the Thursday before was a big, like, day off day for a bunch of teams. Like, the Mets had off and then just, you know, reset for a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you know?
And with that being said, it's very strange because then it's like the league, just the scheduler just wanted the Yankees to squeeze in another series against the Orioles before Memorial Day.
Like, that's what we were
missing. And that's what caused them. But, I mean, that's, you know, things are going very well when that's, like, my biggest complaint going into June. This time last year, I was like, please, God, just make this season be as less painful as possible. Now I'm, like, complaining about the scheduling that happened fucking months ago.
Well, here's something of a shared interest to our respective fan bases. So Noah Syndergaard made his, well, not-so-triumphant return to New York. facing the Yankees. He lasted all of 2.1 innings. What did he give up? 5 runs? Dude just got shellacked.
Seven runs, rather.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Dude just got shellacked. Did not go well. And yeah, you know, as a Mets fan, like, I'm not actively rooting against Thor, but then after all his unnecessary saltiness against the Mets, it's like, all right, fuck you, buddy. I didn't hate that.
Me either. They had the quintessential, like, zoom in of him when they first pull him from the game, and, like, he has, like, you know, the 1,000-yard stare on, looking just out of the dugout. That's always my favorite, whenever a pitcher gets shelled and then they show him sitting in the dugout just contemplating his loss.
Now, conspiracy theory time. Did Noah Syndergaard, in his role as Thor, the god of thunder, bring this unexpected weather system through tonight? And is that the Yankees' excuse for the terrible lack of communication about this rain? Like, they went out of their way to tweet, like, all right, gates are open at 5:30, guys, come on. And then at game time, we're sorry, our bad.
Hours after they opened the gate, too. They opened the gates at 5:30 because it was some sort of bobblehead night tonight. I don't know if it was Aaron Judge or Andy Pettit, but they made sure to get everyone their bobbleheads. And because it was that bobblehead, you know that there was fucking thousands of people already there.
Yes.
So they got their concessions for the first 2.5 hours of that rain delay. And now all those people are going to come back, I guess, tomorrow.
But oh, yeah, they're doing
it's going to be a day game.
Split doubleheader, too.
So you're going to have a lot of people that can't go to that fucking game because, right? It's a fucking middle of the week. I'm always fucked up during holiday weeks. Like, is it still the weekday?
It's very disorienting. Everything gets pushed back. Yeah.
But then after this series with the Angels, the Tigers come into town, and then they finally have another day off, and then they play the Twins in Minnesota. I mean, over the next, 5 games until we record again, I'm not kidding that they should go 5-0. And the Angels are kind of good this year, so I would take 4-1. I think that anything less than 4-1 versus next stretch is a disappointment for this team, to be honest.
Wait, so you're looking at a sweep of the first place Twins? Am I hearing you right?
No, of the Tigers. The Twins are after their day off on Monday.
Oh, of the lowly Tigers. Yes, that makes much more sense. Okay, gotcha.
I mean, they have Detroit, then the Twins, then the Cubs. Like, the next few series should be something that the Yankees need to take advantage of. They need to fucking steamroll these teams, and I don't care that the Twins are in first place, even though Gary Sanchez has been playing really well, but that's okay. They should still steamroll them, because the fucking Central divisions are notoriously soft. No offense to Central team listeners.
Speaking of steamrolling soft teams, the New York Metropolitans, ladies and gentlemen.
What a segue.
I've been doing exactly that. So we had that, as we talked about, with the Giants. They just edged us out in that game, and then that last game of the series got out of hand. The Mets had a day off after that, and they rebounded. They responded, man. 3 from the Phillies, 3 from the Nationals, especially the Nationals. And we talked a couple weeks ago about how, you know, good teams stomping bad teams. That's what you're supposed to do. The Mets outscored Washington 28-5 in that series. They ended the series with 21 straight scoreless innings. And they're hot, man. And what's great is it's not coming from one area of the lineup. It's all spread out. So one big one, fucking doomers and these people that panic immediately with Lindor. Suddenly the narrative, you know, $350 million shortstop isn't worth it, blah, 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 blah. Lindor.
Known value hawks as fans, as if they know what they're fucking valuing.
Exactly. Lindor, since then, has had a 10-game RBI streak, which is second best in franchise history, only behind Mike fucking Piazza, who got like 15 at some point. The dude, over the last 12 games, like 2 weeks of games, has a 992 OPS and 179 weighted runs created plus. I think that's pretty close to his career high OPS, at least in that ballpark. He's playing as well as he ever has, and all it took was, hey, he historically does not start super hot. Even like the hot start this year was a little bit of anomalous for him, I would say. As it warms up, so does Francisco, and we're seeing that. But it's not just him, man. We're going to climb up the ladder. Alonso, over that same span, a 1.118 OPS. My favorite, Guillorme, has a 1.152 and a 236 weighted runs created plus.
Oh my God.
These guys just play.
That's over 2 weeks?
Over the last 2 weeks, 236 weighted runs created plus. It's insane. Marte's been hot too. It's just like it's coming from all sides. McNeil and Ken are hitting. Escobar had that crazy walk-off. We brought that kid Plummer up from AAA. he had a home run as his first hit. Like, it's coming from all sides. And as we talked a couple weeks ago, it's coming in the form of not a crazy amount of home runs, more than it's been. You know, Alonso's had four over the last couple weeks, but it's singles, it's doubles. Like, Guillorme has, I think, 14 hits over the last 2 weeks, 12 of which are singles. And he's just getting on base and getting driven in. And it's one of those things where it's like, you balance, like, this is still a way to build a ball club. You know, like, small ball's not completely dead. Fortunately, Emily, they're not bunting too much, only here and there.
Thank God.
Guillorme did one, but it was good. It was timely.
Bunt singles are not my problem. I don't prefer them. I can stomach them, I suppose. It's sack bunting that I have a problem with, giving up outs.
Like we talked last week with the value between runs and outs, you know, it's, a lot of people don't realize it's, you know, they'll give up runs to get outs in a case like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And so in the midst of all this, you know, I'm talking about everybody producing offensively. One guy wasn't. Poor Dom Smith got sent down to AAA.
Dom, we hardly knew ye.
Well, hey, you know what? He had said in some interviews that he wanted to be on a team where he could play every day. I think the Syracuse Mets might be a team where he can play every day, you know?
Yeah. Cue the Curb music. Dun, dun,
yeah, yeah.
Dun,
Well, I mean, Guillorme has been getting playing time since Dom got sent down. And again, he's stepping up. The dude has, like, again, for whatever batting average is worth, it's fun when it's a high number like this, a .516 batting average over the last 2 weeks. Like, the dude's just hitting. He's so hot. He's walked four times in that span. So I'm going on and on about the Mets offense here. And all of this is in the shadow of these pitching injuries that we had to deal with. Scherzer being out, McGill being out, May being out, DeGrom still ramping back up. And so I was curious to look, like, the offense has been so good. Like, has the pitching been good or just kind of like in games? And it turns out it's kind of the latter. Like, and again, we had a good streak to end against the Nationals with no score. But I looked over the last 2 weeks and the collective Mets pitching FWAR has worked out to zero. Exactly zero. Exactly league average. Exactly. The Mets offense, on the other hand, in that same time span, has amassed 11.4 FWAR. And
their defense.
Exactly. That exactly describes how the Mets feel, you know, when you watch them.
Right.
The pitching hasn't been bad, just keeping them in games. And the offense is just, the carousel just keeps moving, man. It's the Mets, in addition to that, they have they're second in the league in that span in weighted runs created plus. They're first on batting average on balls in play. Again, I say every week that it's sustainable, but because I'm saying sustainable over and over, that's proof positive that it is actually sustainable. So I'm going to say it again.
Good point.
It feels sustainable. It seems to be sustainable. And the Mets ended May with a 10.5 game division lead on the Braves, and that's the biggest in franchise history when ending the month of May. There's literally nothing else I could ask for right now.
When you were talking about Lindor, I wanted to make the point
You thought I was done talking about Lindor? He was also player of the week.
Aw, look at these New York guys.
I had to get that in there.
Oh, yeah, he was player of the week the same week as Jose Ramirez, because someone, I think Fuzzy, is a who's like a content creator on YouTube for MLB The Show. He is a Cleveland fan. So he was like in before all the, oh, imagine if they were on the same team.
Right.
Tweets that he was going to get. But the thing about Lindor is that even when his offense is below average for him, for Lindor's averages, he's a plus defender.
Like,
I'm not learning, but saying one thing I'm learning isn't the right way to put it, but I'll say it for lack of a better term in this moment. One thing I'm learning about how much value defense can bring is the Yankees are a totally different team because they're not allowing stupid runs on bad defense. Their defense is a lot tighter. So, like, people who are acting like as if Lindor brings nothing to the table when his offense isn't there are just casuals. And I get that offense is way more valuable than defense, but there are a lot of players, and since the position of shortstop has been revolutionized over the last 25 years, there are a lot of players who, if their offense isn't there, they are totally useless. I mean, that's why the Yankees got rid of Sanchez, is because his offense wasn't there for them and his defense was terrible. So at least Lindor, even when he's dipping offensively, he's still bringing value to the team because he's able to prevent runs. And that's why the Mets have such a high FWAR for position players, is not only offense, but because their defense has been way better than it's been in the past. Way better.
Well, I mean, and you notice those Lindor haters have been pretty silent the last two, 3 weeks. They were chirping really hard.
What the fuck are they going to say?
Yeah, that did not last long at all. So, yeah, so, I mean, again, the Mets beating up on bad teams is what we're supposed to do. I mean, the Phillies shouldn't be bad. They have a top five payroll and, like, a close to, if not bottom five record. So,
oh, my God, dude. Their fucking bullpen has given up so many just, like, gut-twisting losses right. in the last, like, 2 weeks. It's been insane.
It really is. But so, anyway, so with that context, the Mets are now, this is going to be the test. We got a West Coast road trip coming up. We're facing the Dodgers, the Padres, and the Angels all in a row. So this is going to be really like, okay, now we're on the road. We're facing good teams. I mean, the Dodgers, the best team in the NL right now. So we'll see how it goes. But, you know, even if it's one of those things, like if the Mets could come out of this road trip just over 500, that's a success. You know, just you're right. You know, if you go 500 against the good teams and beat the crap out of the crappy teams for the rest of the year, you're probably going to make the playoffs, you know, and I think they'll do that.
That's literally
and more,
how these teams do it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So to have that kind of cushion this early on is just, it's a nice feeling and I'm not used to it. So I'm trying to enjoy it and hoping it lasts. Maybe it will this time. We'll see. I hate June as a Mets fan. It's just ugh, so stressful.
Right before we recorded, John and I were talking about like just how good it feels to have your favorite team be in first, because not only for the obvious reasons of first place is the best place to be in, but just the fact that teams are going to go on skids and they're going to have tough stretches, and that's relative to the type of team, right? Like a tough stretch for the fucking Orioles may not be the same as a tough stretch for the Yankees, but they both will still have them. But the fact is that in order for the Mets or the Yankees to really switch places with someone in their division is for like epic collapses. Now, the sport is not, that's not like, it's not like that's not something that fucking happens to both teams. It can, but like they have to lose a shitload of games in a row on the same nights that their in-division rivals win if they're not playing each other. You know what I mean? Like there's so many other dominoes that have to fall for either team, especially the Mets, to fucking get taken out of first place at this point.
Oh, and dude, I am certainly not among those prematurely celebrating. I saw on Twitter somebody posted, so before the win today, right now we're 35-17. So yesterday at 34-17, someone was like, well, you know, I hate to spoil the party, but the 2007 Mets were 34-17 as well. And we all remember collapse against the Marlins in September. So I'm not taking anything for granted. Like I said, trying to enjoy the ride as it goes. But the Mets are fun to watch, man. When you're winning every two out of three games, it just makes for enjoyable baseball. And when New York's baseball is good, we've said this all along, baseball is better.
And it also allows you to enjoy things way more in the season. Like last year when the Yankees won like fucking 10 or 11 games straight in August, it was awesome, but when you then put it into context of the season, it didn't get them anywhere in the division because the Rays also won like 9 games in a row at the same time because the Rays were really good last year. So it allows you, being in first allows you to enjoy basically every single thing to enjoy you can, because it's not meaningless in the big picture like it is when you're like middling in your division and you're trying to like climb past other teams and hoping that they fucking lose at the same time.
It's good to be the king.
It's good to be the king.
And on that note, let's get right into the voicemails. Our first voicemail is from Tom.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Tom and Quincy. I hadn't talked to you in a few. I wanted to call in about the current situation in the AL East. Being June 1st and all and having the Sox out of first base behind the Yankees by 11.5 games makes me physically nauseous. And we're in the process, I feel, going tonight after facing the absolute garbage of Major League Baseball between the Orioles and the Reds, winning 2 out of 7. Not encouraging by any stretch. They are like a Jekyll and Hyde team. They can pitch, they can't hit, but when they hit, they can't pitch. The bullpen sucks. There's not one reliable arm out there. You guys must be loving what's going on with the Yankees right now and the fact that you are blowing doors on the rest of the division. I don't see the Sox climbing out of this. So I got to say, at least you guys have a product to watch. Talk to you later.
Tom, and I really do mean this, and I can't believe I'm saying it as a Yankees fan to a Red Sox fan, but I feel your pain. I honestly feel for you because how the Red Sox have been performing this year is like how the Yankees were last year, where there was, and maybe less so because I don't think the Red Sox were necessarily predicted to do too much this year, in comparison to the 2021 Yankees that were supposed to win like over 100 games and yada yada, but they weren't beating shitty teams. That was what their undoing ended up being, is that they couldn't beat the shitty teams. They finished like just over 500 versus the Orioles in their season series, and they were not playing the teams that they should have beaten very well, and it ended up being a terrible product. And it's the reason why we had to play you guys in Fenway for that stupid play-in game. So I totally feel where you're coming from. And the hot and cold shit is the same too. The pitching carried the offense the beginning of last year. And then the offense heated up. The pitching kind of took a dip. Some people got hurt. Whereas now, even when they're not firing on all cylinders, they're still able to eke out wins. And not even eking them out. They're still able to win because baseball, there's so much fucking luck involved in baseball. It's almost criminal, to be honest.
I have not. I mean, you guys talk about your shit. The Mets are good. I'm fine in this conversation.
Tom, I wish I could say I hope for better luck for you guys, but I don't. I hope that it continues to get worse. And hey, at least Trevor Story is starting to pick up on his offense. At least you have that storyline to follow. Tom, thanks so much for your call. Our next call is from Nick.
So the question of the day seems to be, if you was in the Major League Baseball for 162 games, could you get a hit? Emily, why do you gotta crush 40-year-old men dreams who sits on the couch and talks shit about athletes? Come on now. Let them have their little dreams. But let's also be realistic here, right? Let's say 3 at-bats minimum per game, right, for 162 games. That's got to be what? Over 500 plate appearances? I mean, to get one hit, you got to have it. So let these losers have their dreams. And John, how does it feel to still not have DeGrom and Scherzer go around one time in the rotation?
What Nick is referring to is someone, this happens like quarterly, it seems like. Someone tweeted asking the question, the hypothetical, if you were given, you played in 162 Major League Baseball games, do you think you would be able to get a hit? And the answer is no for literally anyone that was reading that tweet that isn't an actual Major League Baseball player or hasn't actually played Major League Baseball, because even the guys that are playing Major League Baseball, like, they fail way more than they actually succeed. Like, Joey Gallo has barely gotten one hit every 10 plate appearances this year, and he's working he has the talent of a professional athlete, and he's working every day with the Yankees coaching staff and their hitting instructors and yada yada, and he still is struggling offensively. So the idea that anyone on Twitter thinks that they can possibly step into a batter's box, I don't care how many fucking plate appearances you get, because it's totally ignoring the difficulty. Like, I feel like people really don't grasp how difficult it is at this level, and that sort of thought experiment proves it even further, because you have bozos being like, I played in college and I think I'd be able to. No, you would not. You'd shit your pants. Whoever you faced in college is nothing compared to the pitchers at this level. I'm sorry.
I think that maybe I'm giving too much credit here, but like, the only thing that I can think of is that it's a lot of casuals confusing making any contact with getting a hit.
We're
talking about, like, you know, with 8 guys, or I guess 9 including the pitcher, defending you. Can you get a hit? Not just like a pitcher throwing to you in an empty field. Can you make contact to keep it fair? That's not what we're talking about. So yeah, but hey, you know, that's that, you know, machismo, bravado, like you got something to prove. Like, no, that would not happen. And also, I feel, how do I answer this? Like, I don't feel good about DeGrom and Scherzer not having gone around in the rotation, but we're like 18 games over 500 and that hasn't happened. So I guess I don't feel too terrible about it. I just hope we get them both back healthy for the rest of the year soon, is how I feel about that.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, you miss them, but you're not dying for them to the point where it's like, we need those 2 wins. Those would be the only wins every week, you know? It's like, they'll be welcome at the party when they come back.
Right, okay. So I guess if anything, it's I guess the positive spin is it's better in that there's not a sense of urgency as of right now, like, oh, we're screwed without them. It's like, no, we're hanging on without them. We're doing okay without them, but how much better could we be with them? So, optimism.
Nick, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from James.
maybe I missed this, but if I didn't miss it, first things first, John, happy birthday. You know, I'm glad that the Mets won for you, and the Mets have right now, you know, 35 wins as of this recording. Good for you, man. Emily, love you, girl. So two questions. Number one, Emily, with the Yankees' upcoming schedule, best case scenario with their injuries, where do you think their ceiling is as they try through this injuries until Stan and Donaldson come back? And John, question to you is, as the Mets keep winning, what other Mets moves are going to be at the deadline, or are they going to make any moves at all? Or their moves are going to be just waiting for Max Scherzer, DeGrom, and McGill to come back?
James, I'd mentioned it briefly in the beginning of the episode. I'm optimistic because they've been able to win games against good teams and even lousy teams with a skeleton crew lineup. So I think I mentioned it before, but I think that they should shoot to go, what did I say, like 4-1 over the next five games. They have the doubleheader versus the Angels, and then they have three versus the Tigers before they have an off day on Monday. So I think that 4-1 is realistic over that time frame. I guess I would be okay with 3-2. You know, beggars can't be choosers, I suppose, just as long as they come out with a winning record. That's really all that matters moving forward. They've now built a nice cushion in the division. Just keep winning and keep winning series. They don't have to sweep every series. Just keep winning series.
Well, thank you very much, James. Yes, folks, the rumors are true. It was my birthday yesterday. I turned 34. I'm now firmly in my mid-30s. It's all over. You caught the best of, you caught the tail end of my best years. I'm sorry. I think, and maybe this is an obvious answer, but I really think it's going to come down to how do they wind up healing with these injuries. You know, if they get these guys back, I could see very few moves. If there's any further setbacks, especially for the starting pitchers, then, you know, they're going to have to do something. So the Mets are very much in wait and see mode. There's a lot of promise around guys coming back later this month, early July. So I think we'll have a little bit of time before we're talking about the trade deadline to get stuff done. So very much, let's see how it goes. Fingers crossed we won't have to do too much is where I'm at right now.
James, thank you so much for your call. Our last call is from Quinn.
Hey, it's Quinn. So first and foremost, the Yankees signed Matt Carpenter. And the first thing I thought was, what is Steinbrenner about to do to this man's face? And then a few minutes later, I see a video of him taking batting practice with that very impressive mustache. And I gotta say, like, the grooming rule, it's like letting him keep that mustache was a good decision, because if nothing else, for that, someone tweeted a picture of him and Cortez in the dugout and said they're talking about strategies for saving Princess Peach, and that's what baseball is all about, I think. And then also Tommy Pham's being a bozo again. Yeah, so we hear the story like, oh yeah, Tommy Pham slapped Jock Peterson like he was Chris Rock, and then he says it's because of fantasy football. And then I'm thinking, wait, what fantasy football? The Super Bowl was 2 months ago. And so, yeah, it turns out he slapped him because of an argument in fantasy football that happened a year ago. And because he put players on the injured reserve, which isn't that kind of the point of fantasy? And if you told me that story about any other player, I would think, oh, that's like some raccoon rat excuse kind of story. But with Tommy Pham, you know, he's just enough of a nutcase to actually get mad about fantasy football like that. And yeah, it's funny because he's like, oh yeah, you're messing with my money, I'm mad. But then he got suspended and loses like $100,000 because, oh man.
Tommy Pham is like the loosest cannon in the league, I would say. And this is a league that includes Madison Bumgarner, who is also a bit of a loose cannon. But Tommy Pham blows him out of the water. Now, it wasn't just about Tommy Pham feeling that Jock Peterson cheated by moving a player to the injured reserve in order to pick up a free agent, which Jock Peterson claimed that Tommy Pham also did, but that wasn't corroborated by anybody else in the league. But what he was mad about, Pham, this is that down the stretch last year, the Padres had an epic collapse, and
Jock Peterson sent a GIF that had, like, you know, the person that was representing the Padres getting, like, pulled to the ground or whatever was making fun of the Padres. And it was Pham and apparently some other guys from the team in the league and the Padres, they didn't say who. And Pham was basically like, yo, dude, I don't know you well enough for you to be making jokes like that. Like, these guys are all colleagues. They weren't necessarily, like, close friends. And while I don't agree with Tommy Pham walking up to Jock Peterson and slapping him across the face like that a year later for that, I also can feel him on some, like, dude, we're not fans. So ribbing us for not playing well is not our favorite team not playing well. It's me and my fucking teammates who are in this chat that are struggling right now in our jobs and what we do for a living. So that shit ain't funny to me. We're not friends.
Well, can I just say, first and foremost, props to Jock Peterson for showing us the GIF.
Yes.
He didn't have to do that. Yes. He could have just been like, oh, you know, it's private conversation. No, the dude took out his phone and pulled up the GIF, which was very funny. Now, can we actually talk for a second about my favorite twist in all of this, that Mike Trout is the commissioner of this fantasy league that we're talking
of all
about?
All players.
How far does this reach? I need to know who else is. It's got to be other players, right? If it's for that kind of money where he's going around slapping people during batting practice, it's got to be some big ass players, right?
I mean, he said that there was a few players from the Padres in it. So yeah, like, how far does it go? A few players from every team, like, and it's going all the way to Jock Peterson, who was that at that time on the Braves. So like, is this stretching across the continental United States?
Well, I'll say this, because, I mean, not to compare myself to Mike Trout, but I am the commissioner of my my fantasy league that we've been doing for over a decade with my friends.
And me, I'm in it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you've been in it the last couple of years. I will just say that injured reserve in fantasy football is some bullshit. We had that our first couple of years. We've since gotten rid of it. Unless we're talking about one of those keeper leagues. Personally, I don't fucks with that. But yeah, man, that's part of the challenge of fantasy football is, you know, there's only 16, well, I guess now 17 games or 18 weeks altogether. Man, I'm not good at commissioner. I got to go back and do that math. But anyway, there's only so many games and you get a new team every year and shit happens. You know, the guy that you drafted first might get hurt and then you got to deal with it. And part of the challenge is, well, do I use one of my roster spots to hang on to this guy or do I cut him loose and make other moves? Having an injured reserve spot in fantasy football for such a short season and so many injuries, it's like, I don't know, it just removes the challenge. So I'm going to dunk on their league, despite the fact that I definitely couldn't afford to participate in their league and say that that's some Bush League shit. And if that was part of his complaint about putting a person on the injured reserve to pick up someone else, Tommy Pham might have a point here. I'm not necessarily condoning slapping people, but his fantasy football argument may have some merit to it, is all I'm saying.
And I love when Trout was interviewed about this and it was came out that he was a commissioner. He then was quoted as saying that he wasn't sure if he was going to resign as the commissioner because every commissioner he knows gets booed. And that is like so adorable.
That's so fun. And I just love that, like, Mike Trout, who, you know, has one of the highest pressure jobs on the planet, but being a fantasy football commissioner, that's just too much. It's too much pressure. Can't handle it. I'm done.
Well, he just saw Jock Peterson get open palm slapped by another right. man. So he's like, he's thinking, if I fuck up, what will Tommy Pham come do to me?
He's just thinking, like, what if Tommy Pham don't know me like that either?
Quinn, once again, thank you for providing us a perfect segue, because yesterday was not only my esteemed co-host's birthday, May 31st, but it was also the very last day of the month, and we have our May bozos and our Mr. May picks. So, like always, we've done it once, but it's a tradition nonetheless. We start with our May bozos. John, who's your May bozo?
Believe it or not, it's not Tommy Pham. We'll give that one to Quinn.
Yeah, we had to give that one to Quinn.
No, so I definitely went Mets-centric for these. My May bozo is Paul Sewald. I never had a problem with Paul Sewald. I liked Paul Sewald. Even when he went to the Mariners, I still thought I liked Paul Sewald. Paul Sewald rode into Queens with just the biggest chip on his shoulder that I was not aware was there. It's kind of understandable because he had to deal with the pre-Cohen regime. Okay, I get it. That's not my fault, man. I'm just a fan. I didn't like those years either, Paul. Like, what did you want from me? So he comes back, he gets a W in one of his relief appearances, and you know, he really just tries to play up the whole villain role that Jesse Winker does so well, not understanding that it's good with Winker because Winker is tongue-in-cheek. Like, Winker doesn't actually hate Mets fans. Paul Sewald is taking this grief against the Wilpons and the old GM and everything out on the fans. And it's like, that ain't it, bro. Like, we're not who you're looking to complain to. And then, lo and behold, he goes back to Seattle and goes right back to sucking. Just lame attempt at being a villain. Just a lame... He would have got applauded every time he came out, and instead he had to play it up for nothing. The Mariners fucking suck this year. So the May Bozo of the month for me is Paul fucking Sewald.
My picks are also my favorite team-centric. So my May Bozo, and this one's kind of a cheat because he's like a bozo every month of the year. Aroldis Chapman. Normally, I wouldn't be so disappointed and so hard on a player who struggles and then goes on to the IL, because then obviously they were dealing with some sort of injury. So it's kind of bad taste to like pile on a guy who was hurt. In this case, is he actually hurt? I'm not sure. And he's not only a shitbag off the field, but his May was historically bad for him. I mean, he had 5.2 innings pitched, 32 total batters faced, and he gave up 11 hits, 6 earned runs, 2 home runs, and 4 walks for a 9.53 ERA, an 8.43 FIP, and a 6.59 expected FIP. That is not what you want out of the bullpen, and certainly not what you want for the guy who's coming out to fucking close games. Aroldis Chapman, you are my May Bozo. Now on to the lighter side, the Mr. May.
All right, Mr. May, for me, which I keep going to my head and from Arrested Development, Mr. Manager. I'm Mr. Manager. No, just manager.
We just say manager.
We just say manager. So Mr. May, if you will. No, Mr. May, is Mets GM Billy Epler. And I guess by proxy, Steve Cohen. But really all Steve Cohen did is he gave Epler the freedom and said, hey, make the best baseball move when it was time to pare down the rosters. And Epler did what you could argue the Wilpons would not, and they cut Robinson Cano. Now, this is not about rooting against Cano, because notice I didn't make Cano my bozo of the month. I like Cano, man. I'm pulling for Cano. I wish that Cano had produced on the Mets, but it was very clearly the right move, because, again, not celebrating this, just stating facts, you look at Cano's numbers on San Diego, they have been dismal. Dude has gone 3-for-33, all singles. He lucked into an RBI. He got walked once. He struck out 10 times. If you look at his advanced stats, they're no better. He has a 215 OPS, negative 36 weighted runs created plus. Like, listen, again, no disrespect to Robinson. The dude is washed. Like, it's over. He's 39. He had that last good season when he was juicing. He's done. Yeah. So, again, not reveling in that in and of itself, but enjoying the fact that the Mets made the difficult decision. They ate some money to do it, but they made the decision to make their team better. And they got rid of Cano, and that was Billy Epler's decision. And look how good they've been since then. The month of May was fantastic without Cano there. And now you got Guillorme and McNeil playing second without Cano having to clog up the infield or the DH spot, allowing for Pete to get days off. You know, it was just the right call. And we were all kind of like anxious, like, are they going to do it? And they did it, and it paid off. So Mr. May for me is Mr. Billy Epler. Great job, Billy.
My Mr. May is my catcher, Jose Trevino. Now, for our regular listeners, last week we were recording during the what's now known as the Trevi game. He walked it off against the Orioles. It was a game where when we started our episode, I was like, the Yankees are obviously going to lose this game. And then by the end of the episode, John was informing me that they actually won on a walk-off by Jose Trevino. And in the month of May, not only, first of all, this guy was brought on for his defense. He's one of the top three framers in the league. He's in the 100th percentile. He has 3 catcher framing runs, which is the tops in the MLB. But for the month of May, he's had 55 plate appearances, and he's slashing 288. 327, 481 for an 808 OPS. That's a 354 weighted on base average and 136 weighted runs created plus, which brings his weighted runs created plus for the entire season so far to 110. The league average for catchers is 85 weighted runs created plus. So, I mean, this guy is just doing it all on both sides of the ball. And is it going to last forever? No. But his May was outstanding. He had his Yankee moment, his walk-off at the stadium. And I'm just so thrilled that he's on the team. He just seems like such a fucking awesome dude. And hopefully he's my Mr. June. He's just my Mr. every single month for the rest of the year if he plays well.
Oh, no, you could just change the award to the Mr. Trevino of the month.
But I just give it to him every month.
June's Mr. Trevino of the month opens the envelope. Wow. Jose Trevino. Can you believe it? In the upset.
That about wraps it up for Breaking Balls this week. We want to thank all of our listeners. You guys are amazing. And of course, our callers. Anyone else listening wants to get in on the fun, feeling brassy, give the Breaking Balls hotline a call. 631-820-7377. You can also find us on Twitter at BreakBallsPod. And we want to thank our amazing producer and engineer, DJ Bingington. You can find him on Twitter as well, at DJ, B-I-N-G, I-N-G, T-O-N. And we will catch you guys next week.